It's time for Windows Weekly. Paul Thorat and Mary Jo Foley are here. The magic window has closed. Paul and Mary Jo will explain what that means. The One Outlook client has leaked. Both of them have first looks. It's not all it's cracked up to be. And Intel adds a new 12th generation processor to the series. What's it for? We'll find out next on Windows Weekly.
Podcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
This is Windows Weekly with Paul Thorat and Mary Jo Foley, episode 776, recorded Wednesday, May 11th, 2022. The Outlook's Oblique. Windows Weekly is brought to you by Nuvei. Say goodbye to abandoned carts, poor approval rates, and high chargebacks with Nuvei, the platform fast-forwarding to the next generation of payments. Turn payments into powerful accelerators for your business at Nuvei.com. And by JumpCloud, your complete platform for identity access and device management. Work smarter, not harder, by securing SSO, MDM, MFA, and more from one pane of glass. Fully evaluate JumpCloud free today at cloud.jumpcloud.com/windows and help your organization move to a modern, secure hybrid work model. And by New Relic. That next middle-of-the-night call is just waiting to happen. Get New Relic before it does, and you can get access to the whole New Relic platform and 100 gigabytes of data free per month forever. No credit card required. Sign up at newrelic.com/windows. It's time for Windows Weekly, the show where we cover the latest news from Microsoft. Joining us all the way from his new domicile somewhere south of the border, Paul Thorat. Well,
at least from the Hilton.
Well,
for now. I don't have internet access.
The Hilton, we call it.
Sure.
The Mexico City Hilton. Paul Thorat, welcome. Good to see you. Glad it's all working out down there. That's exciting.
Yeah, thanks. Me too.
New house, new home.
It's been a trial.
Yeah, well, anything worth doing is going to be hard to do.
Our flight was diverted at the last second from Mexico City to Toluca.
I thought that's odd.
Yeah, so we didn't get in that night until 1 o'clock in the morning, and of course we had a meeting first thing. We just reached a point where I sort of said to Stephanie, like, you know, maybe God's trying to tell us something.
No. Persevere. You're living the dream, yeah. Mr. Thorat. Living the dream. Also joining us from ZDNet, all about Microsoft.com, Mary Jo Foley, no longer on jury duty.
Yay.
We missed you last week.
Unexplained absence from last week.
Paul and I were batching it. It was a little weird.
I heard there was some mayhem. That's what I heard.
Mayhem ensued.
Yeah.
Yep.
There were like 13 Xbox stories somehow. It was like the universe knew.
Now, my friends, it's time, and we are starting a little late for those of you who watch live because Google just had its Google I.O. keynote.
Which was, geez, my God, was 2 hours long.
2 hours and nothing, by the way.
Really? You didn't think, oh, that's interesting. I was actually impressed by some of that.
You know, I have learned, having watched a number of Google I.O. keynotes, not to be impressed by demos that may or may not.
Especially stuff that's coming in the future, right?
Yeah.
Like
everything. Like the phone isn't going to be the 6A won't be available to July 21st for pre-order. The Pixel Buds Pro, July 21st pre-order, delivery July 28th. And then they talked about the watch, which was widely rumored. Mm-hmm. Not till this fall. With the Pixel 7.
Yep.
And then, we're going to do a tablet sometime next year. And then everything else was just kind of like, and everything Apple can do, we can do that too now.
There was a lot of that. I thought the glasses was interesting as kind of a...
Yeah.
But that was totally speculative. I mean, that was like,
nobody even guessed that, did they?
No.
Did anybody predict
that? I was surprised they didn't talk about AR sooner.
Yeah.
Right.
And they had some.
They
cool
kind of indirectly did, right? Like they like stuff with the maps, like what
they had
showing.
A cool thing where you could take the phone and you kind of scan a candy bar aisle and find the best of the candy bars, and that's clearly an AR thing.
Or where scan an item and say here, buy the part or whatever. I thought that was kind of cool.
Yeah, Well, we'll see when they release it. I've been burned before.
That's Leo, you've been around. You've been around
way too much. I'm turning cynical in my old age. Yeah. I am. So forget about that, because Microsoft has real world products. They're out.
We'll see. Right.
Maybe Microsoft's mistakes are out the open, Leo. There.
Yeah, yeah. I had to think that maybe some of this was supply chain holding Google back a little bit. They might want to get this stuff out sooner.
Yeah, that could be.
Yeah.
I saw people predicting, like, if they don't want anyone to leak it, so they're leaking it themselves. I'm like, I don't think that's what's happening, but okay.
Who knows?
Well, honestly, getting ahead of it a little bit isn't horrible. In the sense that Google is the antithesis of Apple, and yet, like Leo said, tends to copy them a lot. You know, doing things in a different way than Apple, because Apple, actually, there are exceptions now, but for the most part, they don't like to pre-announce anything. It kind of differentiates them from...
Yeah, they don't mind that.
Competitor, right.
And then the other, you know, Google's going to great lengths to say, you can trust us. You can trust us, really. You can trust us.
Yes.
And I don't, you know, I was thinking about you, Paul, and, you know, your disdain for the Gmail man and all that. I was just wondering, you know, how you felt about that. Because I think most people think of Google as an ad company and are pretty clear that Google wants more information about you.
If I could communicate anything to Google, and I've had this exact thought watching I.O. in the past. Sundar Pichai gets up and talks about how trustworthy the company is and how wonderful they are and how, you know, they're here for humanity and everything. And they do good things, for sure. I mean, you know, they do some of the stuff
they're
they do
smart
is incredible.
Computer scientists, by the way.
But
early on,
like,
they mentioned a difficult computer science problem. I said, wait a minute, that's trademark Microsoft. You can't say that.
Except they'll solve it. So... I feel like that's a little tone deaf. Like they're not reading the room very well, right? That room they're reading, because those are all Google employees or whatever. But on the world, I think there's an understanding, even the general populace, like the stuff they do is amazing. We love Maps. We have to use that. You know, whatever Google's products and services. But trust, I think you need to work on it.
There's a certain
wariness. I'm not saying they're not trustworthy exactly. I don't really know for sure, but I mean, I have my
just
own
wary
and concerns.
Right? We're wary. Yeah. We're suspicious. Yeah. Because we know that's how they make their money. And when they say things like, we aren't going to sell information to third parties, then in the back of your mind, you go, yeah, but you have it yourself. So
we all have those experiences where you have a conversation with someone else, and then all of a sudden that product appears everywhere in ads or whatever. Right?
Yeah.
Very suspicious. I have other more explicit examples recently where, for example, I wanted to find the year that I had gone to Washington, D.C. as a child. And it was 1981 or 2 or something. And I searched Google Photos. I found it was 1983. Actually, it was later than I thought. And my smart display in my kitchen will not stop showing me photos from Washington, D.C. from that period.
But we know you wanted those, Paul. We know that.
I was just looking for something here, guys. Yeah. Okay, I wasn't trying to change the math on this or whatever. But, you know.
Smart is worse than dumb.
Yeah.
And too smart is maybe worse than anything.
Yeah.
Because I feel like they're almost too smart. And I think people are leery or suspicious of that.
That's
like
they're
so smart, it seems like magic.
And I don't know what Google does to solve this. I mean, this is, you know, it's an issue for them. And I don't know what they do to solve it. But all right. Enough about Google.
Yep.
We're not here to talk about Google. We're here to talk about Windows 11.
Yeah.
The magic window has slammed shut. Ow.
Yes, it did today.
And by the way, just real quick, we had never had a chance to talk about it. The magic window they warned last Friday could shut any time. Now they released a build after 2 or 3 weeks of not doing it on the right day on Wednesday, and the magic window is shut.
Damn.
So we never even had a chance to warn you.
What is the magic window?
Yeah, so the magic window means you no longer can easily move from dev to beta. It's a little more complicated in the Insider program, right? So today, like for a while, we've been getting the same build going to the dev channel and the beta channel, like past few builds. Today, there's one build for the dev channel. There's one for the beta channel. Mm-hmm. The dev channel one is already up to 25.11.5, and the beta is 22.6.2.1. So they're on totally different paths now, going in different directions. If you want to see what is likely going to be the feature update later this year, 22H2, you want to be on the beta channel. You do not want to be on the dev channel anymore, right? And I saw some people on Twitter going, they didn't warn us. I feel like they kind of warned people, but not. They didn't say it's going to happen this Wednesday.
No, they did.
Right.
They didn't say it was going to happen this week, but that I felt that was implicit. In fact, when I wrote up the build from last week, I literally wrote, look, they warned about this, so as soon as next week, this could happen. I wish they were a little more explicit, but remember, last summer they did the same thing, and they never told anyone this was coming.
Right.
And a lot of people were really upset about this. So at least they, you know, they indicated that it could happen.
They did. So if you're on the beta channel build now that came out today, you didn't get any new features. You just got more fixes. That's what's going to happen going forward, right? It's going to be very, very incremental because you're marching towards the feature update later in the year.
So I want to ask you about that. So I'm curious of your opinion on this. So obviously when they split the beta and the dev like this, the indication is that feature pack 1 or whatever, or 22H2 is kind of done, right? I mean, you know, it's only May, but it's kind of done. So is that what this, I mean, have we literally seen what this thing is? Like, is this it?
Yeah, pretty much.
You know, it sounds like a weird thing to say, but.
Yeah. So, you know, what's confusing is they're hyping people up about we have one feature update a year. That's it. That's not technically really what's happening, right? We've seen they are rolling out new features outside of the feature update. So, you know, I saw people asking about Tabs and File Explorer. Like, so does that mean Tabs and File Explorer is not coming this year? It doesn't mean that, right? They could take that feature and just make it part of a cumulative update and say, no, you didn't have to wait for the feature update. Here it is, right? So I feel like the RTM thing is even less meaningful anymore than it was.
Right. Okay. Yeah, that's a good point.
Yeah.
It's like every thought I have about this group is always the same. I wish they communicated better. You know, I wish there was some sense of transparency and clarity.
Yeah. I know.
Somebody called me on the radio show last week and said he'd been willy-nilly moved up a ring or something. Is that possible?
By Microsoft?
Down a ring. Well, like he was suddenly getting daily updates.
Yeah.
Is that part of this?
No.
Daily updates?
No.
No. No, it's once a week at most, I would say.
So for the most part. I don't know what, maybe he didn't know what was going on either.
Okay. Well, but for some number of weeks, I don't remember when this started, beta and dev were on the same, getting the same
I think
deals,
that's what it was. Beta and dev were the same is what he was thinking.
Right. Yeah. So, I mean, I don't know that people have ever been pushed from beta into dev
automatically.
I don't think so,
I've never heard that.
No.
So maybe it was just an overlap. Okay.
So, but here's the more interesting thing. There is one new feature in the dev build that came out today. That's a pretty interesting feature, right? It's called suggested actions. And this is how it works. Say you copy and paste a phone number in Windows 11. A little prompt will come up on your screen and say, do you want to call that number now with Teams? And
Does
doing
this remind you of anything, by the way?
Flippy.
Like smart tags.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Right? Remember they were
looks like you're
smart
making
tags,
a phone call. Would you like me to help?
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Or he also says, if only it had a little clip, like a Clippy icon next to it.
Yeah. Yeah. You know what I want to know, though? How is that? What's enabling that to work? My guess is the Microsoft Graph is what's making that work. But I don't know exactly, like, how is it doing that, right? So say you copy and paste a date. You'll get a prompt and it'll say, would you like to create a calendar item for this and make it into a calendar item? So what's letting it know that the thing you're cutting and pasting is something that could have an action attached to it?
So, I think a lot of times now we call things AI, you know, spell checking is AI, grammar checking is AI. It's more likely this is a table of, matches and it does, and certain actions and applications, I guess, or services that can perform that, some action against that thing that you've selected.
I'm sure
you might have described it as AI.
Or in the past, we might have said Cortana, right? Like that would have been.
Yeah, no, but I think that would have worked the same way. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, because it seems, I just think of it as pattern matching. I don't know. I don't know how. I actually don't know how they implemented it.
Probably is.
Yeah.
Yeah, they didn't explain how they implemented it. But now that, you know, that feature's in the dev channel. So what it means to be in the dev channel is this is a feature that may or may not ever ship in Windows 11 at some time. That's all it means.
Right.
So.
Right.
Maybe it'll be there. Maybe it won't. But yeah, it's still kind of interesting.
It's fine. If you, it's similar to, you know, we have this notion of like the clipboard, obviously, and clipboard could contain anything. And in Windows 10 and 11, right. you can actually turn on an option where you have multiple clipboard items, and that's kind of neat, you know. Mm-hmm. In Windows 8, they had that notion of contracts and sharing. Remember, and you could.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I have some things selected, and I can, you know, it was kind of the same sort of thing. You would bring mm-hmm. up an interface, and it would say, well, here are the things that have registered to do something with that thing you selected, right? It's probably just a modern version of that.
Yeah. Okay. But yeah, so there was also a little loophole, which I forgot about. If you accidentally get moved to the dev channel and you don't want to be on the dev channel, you have 10 days, I guess, to undo that, right?
Oh. See, I wish I'd known that. I could have told that guy.
Yeah.
Okay. Undo. So another, what you're saying is if you undo what? Like if you install the build and go back?
If you install today's build and you're like, oh, wait, I didn't want to be on dev channel. I want to be on beta channel. You can roll back within 10 days. Or if Microsoft delivers another build, then you can move.
Okay.
Yeah.
So this is similar to the rollback capability they have just in stable, right, where you can do that kind of thing going from 10 to 11 or whatever.
Right. So don't panic if you go on the wrong channel.
But it didn't hit your fingers, so that's good.
Exactly. You have a little way to hide
it. It hit your fingers, but now you can open it.
You can lift it up a little bit and squeeze your fingers.
Using the crushed remains of your fingers, open the window.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
I was surprised that Google today did not talk about this new thing they're doing with Fido. They referred to Passkey, and that's it.
Right.
They didn't talk about it, but Microsoft, Apple, and Google are now working. And Steve Gibson talked a lot about this yesterday. He was a little skeptical.
Gibson, skeptical?
Surprised? Come on. You know, he came to the same conclusion I did, which is this is great because it's more secure than what most people do, but it's less secure than what you could do if you were going to really do it right. But it doesn't mean you can't still use passwords or use a YubiKey. It's just a passwordless standard that will be, you know, easy, so people are more likely to use it. Yes?
This is, for the Microsoft fans, this is kind of a good news type of thing because Microsoft has done more to go passwordless than anybody else.
I love what they do with the Authenticator, but it's only for Microsoft products right now. That's the problem, right?
Yep. You never have to type in a Microsoft account password, ever. Like, ever.
Yeah.
And that sounded like a Taylor Swift song all of a sudden. But I don't know where that came from. Anyway, but that's possible. And you can remove your password from your Microsoft account today if you want to, which is a rather incredible thing, which kind of highlights the unnecessary nature of it. I have also, and anyone who uses these other devices has multiple examples. When you sign into any Apple device, a Mac, an iPad, an iPhone, whatever, into your Google account, if you use Chrome, how often you have to sign in, and how every single time you do that, you have to type in a password. It's astonishing to me how often, you know, your phone will reboot and it will say, oh, you got to sign in type your PIN in for security, right? No, the PIN is not as secure as my biometric sign-in.
Right.
That's crazy.
Right.
Yeah.
I will never understand that. And Microsoft is the only one that gets this right.
Ironically, you know, Google has single sign-on, but only after you enter your password.
But you have to enter your password.
You have to do your password, then it'll do the, you know, push to phone.
But it will still ask you for it again in the future. That's what makes me crazy.
Yeah.
You know, with Microsoft, so if you're using some kind of an authenticator app, which you should be, right, or whatever the, whatever 2FA mechanism, different phones have different ways of doing it, you will still have to enter your password from time to time with Google. Mm. It doesn't make any sense. Send me the code, send me the thing. I accept the code. It's doing Face ID or... whatever you have on Android, it's biometric, it's safe, it's secure, it's you. I just don't get it. So these guys, I love that Apple and Google signed on to this. I'm not surprised Microsoft did. This is one area that I deal with on the client side where Microsoft is so far ahead. It's not the only area, by the way, but it's one big area where they're just so far ahead of these other platform makers.
I feel like it was Bill Gates who said, we've got to get rid of the password. Remember Passport, their single sign-on?
We've been talking about this for 20 years.
Yeah.
It's like the paperless future. We're going to do it. Oh, are we?
Someday.
Because I just had to get a paper copy of a marriage certificate in 2022. Like, the paper is a thing. And passwords are a thing, right? But anyway, the fact that they're taking steps in this direction is great. Any progress on this is great. because the reality is we live in a multi-device, multi-ecosystem kind of world. So use an iPhone or an Android device that everyone does. You just do, even if you use Windows. You're going to deal with this baloney from time to time. So I'd like to see this. I'm so glad this is finally starting to happen.
You know, though, as a normal user, I feel like I've gotten jaded and my eyes kind of glaze over when I hear about this now, because I feel like I hear about it constantly. Like Microsoft, don't use a password. How long have we heard that? And every time there's another announcement, I'm like, are they announcing again not to use passwords? Like, haven't we already got to that point? Well, I feel like it's hard to break down the subtleties of what's happening along the path, you know?
You missed this last week, Mary Jo, because you were relaxing on a beach, whatever the nonsense was you were doing. But
there was the story about GitHub.
And by beach, you mean courthouse.
Eating sandwiches out of a bag. So,
wearing masks.
There was announced. GitHub announced last week, which is owned by Microsoft, they're going to force people who you are contributors on the site to use 2FA by the end of next year.
Right.
Like, what? So slow.
How about just enforcing that like right now? Because if you're smart enough to contribute on GitHub,
you ought to be
2FA. Figure out
2FA. Yeah.
And you must be using it everywhere already.
That's a good point.
Yeah. But it was some tiny percentage. I don't, it was less than 50%, but I don't remember the number. It was, in fact, using 2FA with a GitHub account.
It was like 16%. It was crazy.
Was it really?
Yeah. Okay, it was a small number. Yeah. Yeah.
So really small.
Yeah, you would think
number.
It would be like 85%. No.
You would.
That's true across the board, though. The thing is, the Microsoft solution, which is good, as I said, only works for Microsoft, my sense of this is that the goal is to make that kind of login with your Microsoft Authenticator with websites, with apps, with everything.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Yep. That's what it should be.
It would be great, right?
Yeah.
And once you've authenticated,
in the world of identity theft and privacy concerns and blah, 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 whatever, this is ground zero. Your online accounts are the most important thing in the world to you. Maybe not. You have kids or whatever, but, you know, digitally. And is the direction that hackers will go to steal your bank accounts, your money, you know, your livelihood, your actual identity. This stuff needs to be protected. You need to be responsible as an individual to make sure your Amazon account, your Apple account, your Microsoft, whatever it is. These things are tied to credit cards, purchase histories, all your health data. It's so important for this stuff to be protected as much as it can be. So, I think this stuff should all not just be available. I think it should be enforced 100% across the board. And it should be as secure as it could possibly be.
Agreed. Yep.
Mm-hmm. Step in the right direction.
Yeah. We're doing something anyway.
Yeah.
Yep.
Okay.
Yep.
Yeah. Here's really exciting breaking news. You can buy a physical copy of Windows 11.
So
finally.
Is it on floppies?
What's going to put adoption over the top. I'm so glad they did this. This is such an American thing. I want to pay for the convenience of not having to take 5 minutes to do this myself, you know, because there's no disks anymore, right? There's like a CD is not going to slide out of the box. It's a USB key. Anyone on earth, I don't just mean anyone, well, I'm exaggerating, but people listening to this podcast, obviously, even normal people, so to speak, if you will, like mainstream, normal, non-technical people could make a USB bootable USB setup. You know, this is a wizard. It doesn't require command line codes or
Microsoft has a site called Windows Media Creation Tool.
Yeah. I bet if you typed in I need to install Windows 11 or something in
right
plain
there.
English like that,
it
would go right to this site. Right. It's very simple. I guess I don't know. Is physical retail coming back? Is that a thing?
Hey, but you get a nice Microsoft labeled USB key, right?
Yes, you do.
Do you get a serial number?
Yes, you do.
Which you will never need again.
Yep. I mean, you kind of don't need it now. I mean, I'm not saying you don't have to buy Windows, but I mean, you know, if you tried to use this thing without a key, it would say, hey, you probably want to buy this thing, right? It would happen there. You know, you don't. You're actually, is it easier to type in a key or is it easier just to make this purchase electronically and have it happen automatically?
Yeah.
I don't know.
It must have something
associated with your Microsoft.
But it's, you know, like everything else, it's something to do with business. Mm-hmm. Like,
I don't know what it has to do with, because I don't understand. So this thing shipped last October without any physical keys, pre-made physical keys. I feel like that kind of proved we didn't need them. You know, I don't know. Was there a midnight event I missed in October where we showing up at Best Buy's at midnight to buy things?
Get in line.
I think they just wanted to put the pretty ribbon on a box. That's what I think.
Yeah.
Oh, that's it.
Okay.
It's pretty.
I don't mind that it exists. I just think it's weird.
Space.
They didn't do this last year, so why? I mean, like, what are you doing? Like,
yeah. Now, the timing is very odd, right? Why now?
Yeah, I thought it was weird. It's okay. It doesn't hurt anything.
Yeah. I saw some people saying, maybe it's because they're about to make the upgrade not free. I'm like, oh, guys, they want you to upgrade. It's going to stay free. Don't worry.
Yeah. Finally, in our Windows 11 segment, Microsoft updating the apps bit by bit. What's the latest one?
Pixel by pixel. So if you're a fan of rounded corners and stuff like that, and you don't care too much about quality, Microsoft has updated apps like Paint, Photos, Snipping Tool, Media Player, which God help you if you need that, Clock and Calculator, right? The one thing they've done a pretty good job about, I would say, is Notepad, you know?
Thank you.
That's.
I'm like, wait, you didn't mention Notepad. Pretty... Where is it?
Because I was trying to differentiate that from all the apps that are terrible.
Okay.
So Paint is a disaster. The thing they did to Paint is terrible.
Yeah.
I also feel like there are these high-level apps that are maybe a little more important than this stuff, like Mail and Calendar and stuff, and we'll get to that. But they're really focusing on these kind of minor apps for the most part. There is an app in Windows 10 and 11, actually, called Voice Recorder. And you can tell the new one's completely different because now it's called Sound Recorder. See? The next version will be called Noise Recorder. I don't know. It has a few new features. I mean, it's visually updated, of course, as a new visualization. And you can record. You can change the recording device and file format directly from within the app. Previously, you have to go to the Settings app to do that. So, yeah, you know, okay. Are a lot of people using the Voice Recorder app in Windows today? I mean, every platform has a Voice Recorder type app,
I guess. It's like you just gotta have to have one.
You could buy a new microphone, and you're like, I need to test it. What can I use? Type in recorder. Oh, there it is. Oh, yeah, it works. I don't know. Not a big deal. But anyway, yeah. They seem to think this was such a milestone that they would iterate through every single app they've updated in Windows 11 since it launched last October, which is another thing. These things all should have been part of it, you know, when it launched on day one, but we do things differently now. I guess we dribble out updates, you know.
We do.
It's like you have Novocaine and you can't keep it in your mouth or something. I don't know. I don't know what they're doing.
It's to keep the excitement going.
That's it.
Yeah, keep
the hype cycle.
Yeah,
the hype cycle has to continue.
Hype man.
Yeah.
The hype cycle.
It's all about the hype
God.
Cycle.
God, it's just, you look at on the themes on Twitter, what are the news themes? It's like, you know, Ukraine, COVID, Windows 11 apps.
Bikinis.
Kind of go from there.
Yeah.
You know, the royal family.
The big ones. Yep.
Yep.
All right. Let me take a little time out, a little pause for our station identification on the Windows Weekly broadcast network. And then we will come back and we'll talk about, and I know this is exciting for you all, Microsoft 365.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But first, a word from our sponsor, Nuvei, tomorrow's payment platform designed to accelerate your business. If your payment provider is holding your business back, Nuvei's next generation payment technology not only boosts conversions, reduces fraud, and increases approval rates, but it works seamlessly with your existing tech stack. In fact, it's so simple. It's just a single API integration to connect to all the Nuvei goodness. With Nuvei's agile platform, your business will also be allowed to add new payment methods, enter more markets, meet evolving customer demands, so you can stay ahead of the curve all easy as pie. Nuvei offers more than 550 alternative payment methods, including, of course, yes, cryptocurrencies, and local payment solutions in over 150 currencies around the world. Nuvei offers local acquiring in 46 countries, more than 200 global markets. You see what I'm saying? This is the future. Customers also benefit from all payout options, card issuing, banking, and fraud management services. Nuvei can handle any demand peak as well, by the way. They're always on approach, assures five nines of uptime. Flexible a la carte solutions tailored to your needs. I'll tell you, all you have to do is say, well, who uses Nuvei? And you'll see, oh, Crypto.com, General Motors, DraftKings. They probably have quite a bit of traffic, right? And peak times. Wix, Valve, Valentino, all use Nuvei and many, many more. Future-proof technology, a really talented, dedicated team of human support professionals there for you 24/7 every day of the year. Nuvei prepares your business for whatever comes next. It's so important to business to have a good payment platform. You need Nuvei. Say goodbye to abandoned shopping carts, poor approval rates, high chargebacks. Nuvei is the platform fast forwarding to the next generation of payments. Nuvei. Turn payments into powerful accelerators for your business. Nuvei.com. Nuvei.com. Nuvei. Tomorrow's payment platform. Right now. They're there for you. Let me guess. Mary Jo Foley, I'm thinking, might want to take the lead.
How did you know?
I don't know. I just kind of had a feeling. Microsoft 365 / IT.
Yes. So Microsoft this week published many, but not all, of the sessions that are going to be held at Build later this month. And so, of course, one of the first searches one would do is for the word metaverse. And yes, there are going to be sessions about the metaverse. There's going to be one that looks like a keynote called Preparing for the Metaverse. And when you look at this session, it kind of echoes what Microsoft announced last year at Build when they talked about their idea of the Microsoft Metaverse. So, you know, everyone else, when you think metaverse, you're thinking like what Meta's talking about, you know, like, and Microsoft to some extent too, with avatars, these new fake shared environments where your legless avatars can have a party in a little new space, right?
Some party without legs.
Yeah. Yeah. But what Microsoft really cares about, unsurprisingly, is the enterprise part of the equation, right? So the Microsoft metaverse, they've said they think there are multiple metaverses. And there's one they've started calling the industrial metaverse, right? So the industrial metaverse, when you look at what's in that stack, it's all the Microsoft enterprise products that they're kind of pitching as being applicable to the metaverse. So stuff like IoT is in there, digital twins, which I think is legitimately in there. You know, the idea that you have a digital model of a real world asset. Azure Maps, just like Google just showed at I.O., like there's a way to make maps more friendly to three-dimensional environments. Even products like Synapse Analytics, they say, is part of this, and Azure AI, autonomous systems work they're doing. So I did a post just to remind people when they hear Microsoft's pitch for the metaverse, it's not just going to be this Teams for Mesh thing that we've saw last year, which is very glitzy and very 3D. It's also going to be all this more applied, more enterprisey, more industrial kind of stuff that they also think about as the metaverse. So, yeah.
Wow.
I know.
Industrial metaverse. There's a two words.
It doesn't sound exciting.
I really
but you know
didn't
what?
Want to hear it together.
But you know what?
Yeah.
That's where all the money's going to be. That's where all the money's going to be.
Yep.
Right?
Okay.
It's not going to be guys sitting around the campfire with Alex Kipman doing a dance around the campfire. That's not where money is, right? It's not.
I think we're not saying that's
We've
not.
We've learned that. Not that that's not fun.
Yeah. No, that's fun. But
Burning
like,
Man was sad.
Yeah, digital twins, guys. It's the new metaverse, just renamed.
I love it. Yeah. Paul, you've been playing with Outlook, the One Outlook client, I hear. Little bird tells me.
Yeah.
We got it. Yeah. I got it, too.
Both of yous.
Oh, did you try it? Oh, interesting.
Yeah.
So it only works with commercial accounts, which is...
It does. Yep. And education,
by the way,
too, right?
If you follow the stink show that's occurred because this leak, like Microsoft's really upset about this. And like
they
a lot of the MVP types. Well, I know, but a lot of people that are under NDA have been really upset. And like, you know, so they've Some of them have kind of come out and started writing about it. And then other MVPs are like, what are you doing? You're violating your NDA. And it's like, it's not public. It's like, you still can't talk about that. And like, there's been a whole, like, just like, this is caused, this is like going back to the 90s.
Do you think it really was Microsoft that leaked it?
I think they accidentally leaked it.
Oh, wasn't on purpose.
Yeah. Here's the thing. We can talk about what this is specifically, but my takeaway right off the top was we've been waiting for this thing for a long time, right? Yeah. This has been discussed or rumored for not years, but a year
couple
or more,
years.
A year and a half.
Yep.
A couple of years. Okay. Mm-hmm. It was supposed to ship late last year, and it was delayed. It probably would have timed it to Ignite, I would imagine. So we've been waiting. We've been hearing April, May. May is when build is. Like, maybe they're going to time it to build for some reason, whatever. You could sort of, if you would ask me a month or two ago, what do you think this thing is? I might have given you a certain answer around a modified version of the web apps that we have, like Outlook on the web or Outlook.com, whatever. And then it leaked. And it's Outlook on the web in an app window. And I don't know if it works offline or not. I actually never tested that. I assume it does.
Or will, at least.
I don't understand what we've been waiting for here. Like, this is... it's fine. It's absolutely better than those mail and calendar apps in Windows 10 and 11. No doubt about that. But why have we waited for this? Like, what is this thing? Like, it's just a web app.
Yeah. So, this is what we're talking about is Project Monarch, which we've talked about on the show a lot, also called One Outlook. So, the reason Microsoft's building this is for them, right? They want to have one code base that works on Windows, on the web, and on the Mac, right? Right now, all these different things are different code bases. So, when they update features, it comes to one platform, then another, and they have to try to keep them in sync and add features over here and there. So, when they have this code base done, and it is actually the same product that works on all these platforms, it's going to be much easier for them to roll out features quickly. And for users, you'll get features faster. Okay. It looks exactly like Outlook for the web. The one thing I notice you can't do is add multiple accounts, which I also would assume is coming. Gmail.
Let me ask you about that real quick, if you don't mind. Also, last week, you were out gallivanting around, I don't know what you were doing.
eating dumplings in Chinatown.
There was a story about Microsoft has brought back multi-account support to Office.com, which is very interesting. This is something you used to be able to do way back in the day, and there was some technical complexity that caused them to kill this feature. But the idea is you have, you know, maybe you sign into Outlook. Well, actually, that's not a great example. You sign into Office.com, and you have a personal Microsoft account like I do, and you have a commercial Microsoft account like I also do. Yep. And you want to just switch between those things. You don't want to have to go through the whole sign out, laboriously sign in, 2FA, blah, 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 whatever.
Yep.
So they've added that capability. Well, I mean, Outlook.com and Outlook on the web are in this ballpark, right? It seems like that capability could be coming and that maybe that's the way they'll do it, the way we see it on Office.com. You know, it's just not in that app yet. Maybe.
Right.
That was
I have people who got the leaked build who say they have the capability in their app. So they may be rolling it out in a way that some people are getting the features earlier than others and some aren't.
Do you know how it works? Is it actually a feature, you know, you go to settings, add account, or is it like
It was funny. I almost never download leaked stuff because I'm afraid to do it. And I'm also like, what am I going to do with it? But this one, because I've covered it for so long, as soon as I saw the leak on Windows Central, I'm like, I'm just going to download it. And I clicked the link and it downloaded. And right after it downloaded, I got a message saying, you do not have access to this. But I'm like, no, I got it right before they tried to shut me out. Right. And
what?
Then
they actually tried to shut me out.
I got a message in my browser saying, you do not have access. You cannot get this app. And then I'm like, I got it, though. There it is. It's here. I've got it. And then I'm like, there's nothing to see, really. Okay. And then a guy from Microsoft goes on Twitter and he says, Mary Jo, did you think this just might be a honeypot for us to collect all your email information? Like, you got to build.
By the way,
I'm like,
that's funny. That's funny and illegal. And nice of you to say that out loud.
It was definitely a joke. It was definitely a joke. But he's like, and I said, I took one for the team.
You know,
but yeah, I agree with you. There's nothing there to see. Like, it's not that interesting, right? The concept is good.
Oh no, I don't dislike it. I think the issue is just the anticipation was so great.
Right.
And then it's like, oh, it's just the web app. It does open sub windows, which I like. Some of the links open in a browser tab, which is weird, which also speaks to it being a web app, right?
It's also a preview. It's early, right?
This is not the final version,
right?
I'm just surprised it wasn't more different. After all the delays, I sort of assumed they must be working on something spectacular here.
Yeah.
And it's like, oh, it's the web app, you know, which is fine. Which is not bad. I don't mean it.
No, all the leaks were like, it's going to look just like Outlook.com. And I'm like, it probably will, because that's kind of, they think that's a good design and that's where they're going with this, right?
Yeah. It supports the same kind of like, you know, you can do themes on these apps.
Yeah.
It does the same thing. The header changes, whatever. It's fine. You know, it's fine. Yeah.
It is. It's fine. Yeah. Of course, people who like the Outlook native Outlook client and Windows are freaking out about this because they're looking at this and going, okay, you can't do this. You can't do this. I don't like it.
Well, listen, dinosaurs, there's an asteroid heading for the Earth and it's got your name on it. So do you think they'll actually replace it or just put it in with it?
So the rumor I heard, the last rumor was Microsoft plans to try to do this gradually, right? So at maybe before the end of the year, it'll be in Windows 11 alongside the mail and calendar app. And then at some point they'll be like, okay, guys, we're trying to wean you off the mail and calendar app, blah, blah, blah. And they're not just one day going to take the mail and calendar app out suddenly and like, boom, here's your new thing. They're not going to do that.
But what if you're not using Outlook Mail or Outlook.com Mail? Will it still, is it a full mail client?
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. It works
and
with
calendar,
your
mail calendar. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, so, and contact.
So you could replace mail with it then. Okay.
You could.
Oh, yeah.
Just the name
makes
me think it's like, well, it's Outlook.com for the desktop, kind of.
But it's also not like, well, what about Office, right? So if you have a Microsoft 365 account, you go to Office.com and you download Office. Right now you get the desktop version of
Outlook. Yeah.
At some point, is this going to be,
replace
you know,
that? I would guess, yes.
Lauren sent me a message that was, I think, in the... I don't know if it was in Microsoft 365 or Office.com somewhere, you know, that talked about how this was an unsupported, you know, early test version, et cetera. Yeah. It said this version is missing some of the key features and enhancements that will be available later for our customers in the beta channel. Beta channel of Office?
My guess is Windows. Yeah.
Okay. I was curious what that meant. Yeah. We encourage customers to wait for the beta version to be released.
Yeah.
Hmm.
Okay.
Yeah. So my message to people is it's out in a leaked form. You can download it or not download it. I don't think they've removed the link to download it. They're cautioning people. Not all the features are there. They said it's going to be in the beta channel within a couple weeks or in the coming weeks. Right. So that can mean anything. It can mean months from now.
It could be.
Right. But
the important thing to know is you can't just use it if you have a Microsoft account. You have to have a commercial.
Right. You have to have either a business
or education.
Or education. Right. If you just
if you don't have that,
Microsoft
it's just,
personal or home, you can't use it.
It's not going to work.
No.
Yeah. Now, I assume eventually it will work.
Right.
And I assume eventually they'll have some form of multi-account. So we'll see.
Yep.
I think it looks fine. I don't understand why this is taking so long. And I think because it has taken so long, I thought, man, they must have something special planned here. And it's fine. It's fine. Like I said, it is absolutely better than the stuff built into Windows today.
It is. It's nice.
But if you had Office, wouldn't you just use Outlook? By the way, they've got to solve this naming. They've got to solve this naming.
No, everything's. It's going to just be called Outlook again. They're just going to call it Outlook.
Yeah.
So confusing.
Yeah, I know.
One Outlook is a perfect name for something that has 17 versions.
Yes, right. There is no one Outlook.
No, there is
Outlook
no
Legion,
one.
You know.
Yeah.
I don't know.
They don't want to call it Outlook Express for obvious reasons. So,
right. But then the Outlook that's on your phone, that's not going to change. Yeah. That's still Acompli under the covers, right? Like, that's not going to become the one Outlook thing.
Oh, my God.
Maybe that's the next step, though. Once you've got the code base moved over to this, you could do a new mobile client.
Maybe.
Are there so few names left?
No, you know, Microsoft wants to pretend things are unified that aren't unified. So that's why they... Do things like that with the naming.
It's mail. All mail's Outlook, right?
All mail is Outlook, guys. That's it.
Mm-hmm.
That's the end.
It's a bleak Outlook, but it's an Outlook.
Sure it is.
Yeah.
It's a bleak Outlook. Wait a minute. I'm writing that one down. There's a show name.
A bleak.
A bleak Outlook.
Oblique and oblique, both.
What's oblique?
It's an oblique. It's an oblique.
B-L-E-A-K.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking, like bleak house. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Oblique, too. Yeah. You're right. It's all
yes,
of the above.
Also oblique.
Yeah. Oh, Lord. Speaking of names.
Oh, yeah.
Can't call it Power App Portal anymore. No.
No.
Oh, boy.
Yeah. Microsoft loves to rename things, as we know, especially in the Power Platform family. They've done a lot of renaming there, and there's more to come. Looks like the thing that's now called Power Apps Portals, which is a terrible name that doesn't really describe what this product is going to get a better name, Power Pages. Power Pages is a way to make pages like websites and basically business-centered websites. So it's a development and hosting platform. Some people said like Front Page used to be. Yeah, kind of like that, right? Kind of like SharePoint portals probably also. And so the Walking Cat, our friend who always finds great leaks, found a video that talked about Power Pages. And then when you clicked on the URL, it resolved to Power Apps Portals. So it is the same thing. I'm guessing that will be another announcement at Build, that they're rechristening it.
They got a long way to go before they're as crazy as Google. One of the things they announced today was the Google Wallet, which was renamed Google Pay, is now going to be Google Wallet again.
Again.
I love that.
Yep.
How many passes does one get? You know,
it's so crazy.
So happy Android's finally going to get a wallet app. It's great.
It's so crazy.
So great.
Oh, look, we haven't talked about hardware yet. Is there anything to talk about? I'm still waiting for my Dell.
Sure,
I think because of supply chain, et cetera. It's still another month off, but my XPS 15.
Yeah. I thought your computer might be as late as July. No,
is that? Yeah, right? I think you're right. I'll log into Dell while you tell us all about the latest.
Yeah, okay. So Microsoft has been doing a lot of work around accessible hardware, right? We know about the Xbox Adaptive Controller, which is really cool. That dates back a couple of years. There's a Surface Adaptive Kit, right? And they had an accessibility event recently, and they're going to release a bunch of new, what they're calling adaptive hardware. And these are almost like little kits you can use to construct.
I thought these were really cool
hardware
looking
devices.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
This is amazing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So the big example is the mouse. And so the mouse, the base part of the mouse looks like the first iMac mouse or whatever. It's this teeny thing. It's got two buttons and a scroll wheel. But then you can add on to it and you can build it into the mouse that you might need for your, because of your particular physical needs or whatever. And they're going to do the same thing with keyboards and other devices as well. And I have to say, as they've been making these announcements about different accessible hardware technologies, I've been thinking, is this a flash in the pan? Are they just like kind of throwing this out there? But I look at this and I think, I don't know, this has got legs. You know, it's interesting how they're really expanding on the capabilities. And these things will even be customizable with 3D printers. So they'll give you the tools you need to actually design and build your own add-ons for these things using 3D printers, which is also really exciting. So it's really incredible. If you have a physical impairment of some kind, maybe you don't, you're missing a hand or an arm or whatever, they can design using these parts, essentially design hardware that you can use to interact with computing
devices.
This is
how it should be, because everybody is different. So make a kit that you could put together that fits the needs.
This is just to give you an idea of how far off, how far ahead this is compared to how things were just a few years ago. Companies that make mice don't even make mice for left-handed people. I mean, a lot of mice are just for righties. Like,
what about my disability? I'm a lefty.
This is not a step forward. This is like a quantum leap forward, that's really interesting. It's neat. I like to see stuff
It's
like
great.
This.
They've been very good in adaptive technology.
They've really taken a leadership position in accessibility in some ways. Yeah, it's really interesting.
Bravo. Well done.
Yeah.
All sorts of ways you can configure these to work with whatever your issue is. Including you poor lefties.
Sorry. Let's be specific. We're not going to solve the lefty thing.
Nobody can solve it. I did get my new Dell mouse, and it's agnostic.
Omnidirectional or whatever.
Ambiguous. I don't know.
It's ambiguous.
It's just a lozenge. Although it has a slight tilt to the left, which means that's okay. I'll live with that. By the way, my XPS 15 9520 with the 12th gen Intel VPROM processor.
Which series processor is it? Do you know?
It's the 9520. So I don't. I got an i5.
We'll have a letter in there somewhere. It's going to be a P, a U, an H.
No. Oh, that's. Let me look. I will look. Come on, Leo.
Come on.
It's a H. What is the H?
Oh, that's
mean?
Great. High performance.
High performance, even though it's a i5.
Yep.
Interesting.
No, so the above you get i5, i7, and i9 options.
So it's a 12500H. 12 is the series. Yep, 500 is because it's a P5, and the H is because it's high performance. 18 megs cache, 12 cores. So, yeah. Two of those cores, I think, are efficiency.
And this is a hybrid design, so it's going to be a certain number of performance cores and a certain number of efficient cores.
That's why I decided I think I should try the i5 because, I think it might be enough, right? It might be plenty.
Yep. I bet it is.
Yeah. So it's going to come June 11th. June 11th.
Oh, that's good.
Thereabouts.
Okay. That's not that far away. A month from today.
I'll get it before the trip. That's the key. Mm-hmm. Give me plenty of time to put Linux on it before the cruise. I won't do that,
Make
Paul.
Sure I'm not drinking when you say things like that.
I won't do that. I promise. I'm sorry I had to do it.
Don't you dare.
I promise
like
I won't do that. So the Army had how many HoloLenses did they order? Thousands.
One, but it cost like $12 billion.
Yeah. A lot of HoloLenses. So now, and by the way, the rumor is the Army's unhappy.
Right.
Yep. But now VW's getting some.
Yep.
What are they going to do?
So first, the Army wasn't actually getting HoloLenses. They were getting these modified goggles that used HoloLens technology inside, but they weren't HoloLens. Now, Volkswagen's working with Microsoft. And this, when you first hear it, is so bizarre. They're like, so you could use a HoloLens inside a moving car. And then you're like, wait, why would I ever want to do that?
No.
Right?
Yeah.
But it's not really exactly that. So what they're trying to do is make it so that holographic images can be displayed like at the front of your car on
a
top of the dashboard.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay.
Right. Fine. So that you could see like pedestrian warning on your display. Or if you're teaching someone how to drive a certain kind of vehicle, you could have like automated tutorial kind of stuff, right?
My Audi used to have like a night sight thing, but the screen was down to the left of the steering wheel. Like, you'd have to go...
No, you don't want that.
Pedestrians out there? Oh, God, I think there are. This way, it's on the windscreen. That's a good place.
Yeah, so where it belongs.
It is.
That's a heads up.
Right. So, Microsoft's doing a lot of things with holographic technology and autonomous vehicles. And that's kind of where this fits in, right? It's not... When I first read it, I'm like, okay, who's going to wear a HoloLens in a car and try to, do something with the HoloLens?
If you've driven a Hummer, it has a HoloLens-like field of view. But, no one is really looking for that.
No.
No.
And the good news is, if you're in a Hummer and you hit a pedestrian, you'll hardly notice it. So that's the good news.
Exactly. You will not.
It probably won't even hurt the vehicle.
It won't hurt the vehicle at all. Yeah. No. You just go right through them.
Right. This is all about Microsoft trying to show, there's a lot of bad press out there for the HoloLens right now, but there's still really good applications for the holographic technology.
So it's really Windows holographic that Volkswagen is buying.
Yes.
Yeah, that's pretty exciting. Yeah. I'm thinking about my next electric vehicle. Because the lease on the Mustang.
You're already thinking of your next
This is I live in the fantasy world of the future. Well, no, 2005, I've had the Mustang Mach-E for a year. So in 2 years, I'm going to buy a new one. And I'm looking at this Volkswagen. Mm-hmm. They recreated the van, right? The bus.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So the Buzz. And that would be kind of cool to have that on the Buzz. Mm-hmm. That'd be kind of cool. Yeah.
This is sort of what I thought Hollins was going to be when they announced it. Yeah. I distinctly remember this day. The way they were talking, it was about holograms, and I was thinking they're positioning cameras or scanner, whatever it is, projectors around the room, and we all on, you know, in the audience will see holograms on the stage, and this will be incredible. And then it was like, well, you know, you put on this Darth Vader helmet thing. And then, you know, the more you learned about it at the time, it's like, well, okay, it's
early days. That's the thing.
But it was.
And I have to say, Microsoft gets as much out of this partnership with VW as VW does. The whole thing on these things is getting data, you know, training them, learning.
Well, they also could use a PR win, frankly. You mentioned the U.S. Army. You know? but we need some use of this to make sense.
Right.
In a broad context, and this is a nice mainstream application of this technology. So,
do we know how much?
To me, it looks great.
They've invested in HoloLens up to this point. Must be billions, right?
Oh, yeah, for sure, billions.
Oh, many billions.
Yeah. So I have the H, the 12500H.
You remember the Simpsons episode where he bought a computer and he's driving down the highway and there's a billboard that's for the next version
every
of that computer?
Time that happens to me. Every time. Did I
just
do it again?
To you? No. So, thanks to this kind of hybrid architecture that they now have with the 12th gen core and newer, I'm sure.
Yeah.
They're able to have different versions of it within the product family. So, we've always actually kind of had different versions. You was the mainstream. And by the way, I should say, for this conversation, we're just talking about the mobile versions because there are also desktop versions that are, you know, higher powered still. But just looking at mobile back in the day, by which I mean 3 months ago, it was basically U series was just went out on probably 90-something% of all the mobile chipsets. But we also had H series, right, which was the high performance version. There was a W series, which was aimed at mobile workstations. You know, so we've always had a few different versions, but they're really starting to split them up more and more. With the 12th gen, we still have U series, which was I think a 15-watt part. P series, 2830 watts, I think. H series, I believe, is 56. Now they're introducing an HX series.
Oh man!
And this thing starts at 55 watts, but it can actually deliver up to 157 watts under load.
Oh, I don't want that in a laptop. That's no.
And there's the other little asterisk with it is it actually comes with previous generation integrated graphics. Because the assumption is that any PC maker that uses it will be putting discrete graphics from Radeon or
so. This is for gaming machines or something where you don't mind it's plugged in and it's and the fans are blowing like Gone with the Wind and
It's got it's definitely and so this is a way for them. I also think you know frankly, Apple Silicon it maybe influenced this notion that we can have higher end versions. That, you know, more and more cores, you know, more performance cores. Right. Support for next gen technology like DDR5 RAM, ECC RAM, PCIe 5.0.
So I'm not disappointed now that I got the
H. Honestly, if you're that laptop with like U series, even would probably be great.
I'm excited.
Fantastic.
And I think I ordered the XE graphics too, so the little higher end.
Iris XE. That's good. Yeah, I mean, you're not going to be playing, Call of Duty with it.
No, a little Minecraft. But you wouldn't. That's all.
Fortnite would be Minecraft. Fine.
Yeah, a little Minecraft. That's all.
Tomb Raider game that everybody plays because it's benchmarks old. Great on everything.
This is so old.
Yeah.
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 I'm actually really looking forward to it. I love my, I still have my 10th generation, XPS 13, and I love it. It's a great little machine. So
The XPS has always been fantastic. And they fixed the camera issue, obviously. Yeah.
Up the nose. The up the nose camera.
We should do podcasts like that. Let's see.
Everything should be.
Let me get as jowly as I can.
Oh, let me check. What's going on here? Other hardware. AMD has some new stuff. Yes.
Yeah, and this is for Chromebooks, which is kind of weird. I think this is the first time an x86-based chipset has been designed specifically for Chromebooks, but they worked with Google. Google is going to specifically support these chipsets. It is the same sort of hybrid design, you know, Intel's doing, obviously, in many ways. I think AMD on x86 kind of pioneered there with, you know, high numbers of cores. These guys are doing 8 high-performance processor cores. there's no way to know anything about how good these are. They're 15 watt pieces, so these things sort of map to the U series on Intel, if that makes sense to people. And we'll have to wait and see, but there's going to be three different versions. So, you know, 3, 5, and 7, just like, you know, on Intel, right? You know, Core i3, Core i5, Core i7, we have Ryzen 3, 5, and 7. So, 8 processor cores, 8 GPU cores on the high-end version, and then the low-end version, which is maybe more like an Atom or something, I don't know. 2 processor cores and 3 GPU cores. I think it comes with a hamster if you need a little bit of extra
power. Do you have any AMD, any AMD machines?
Yeah, I've never had any issues with AMD.
I can't tell the difference, to be honest.
So there is one big difference, and this is just a, you know, it's going to be more of a problem in the future if they don't fix it, which is just Thunderbolt support, right? Although
that's true,
Thunderbolt 4, USB 4 is sort of the same thing. Yeah. So I don't know that we support USB 4 in AMD. I don't recall,
a good point. Yeah, that is a good.
That's a bridge to cross. But
yeah. Yeah, my AMD gaming machine, you're right. No Thunderbolt.
Yeah, which is kind of a weird deal.
It's a bummer.
I just transferred a couple of videos off my iPhone. It took 28 minutes. I don't know why, but it's, you know, it's like USB 2 speeds. I mean, I think speed really matters depending on what you're doing. So if you're doing video work, for example,
yeah,
you need some kind of a high speed something to get that thing off. I guess in that case, it's going to be your network. You know, I don't know. I don't know what you would do with, I guess, well, USB 3 is pretty good.
Yeah.
But, you know, you want Thunderbolt.
Yeah.
Four.
Yeah. And as far as gaming, my AMD with the NVIDIA graphics card is fantastic. It's fantastic.
Yeah, I bet it is. Yeah.
Yep. It's great. All right, let's take a little break. We're going to talk next about Build. It's coming up.
Finally, we know
a little bit more. But first, let's talk about security. You know, if you run a business, that cybersecurity is kind of the number one top of mind issue for any business. You know, you're probably spending a large portion of your IT budget every year to buy cybersecurity tools, more complicated, more staff with cybersecurity credentials, more expensive. It doesn't have to be that way. Good security does not mean, in fact, it shouldn't mean more complicated security. Finding the right solution to solve your security issues is absolutely critical to your success. Without burdening your overworked IT and security staff. That's why I'm recommending JumpCloud. JumpCloud, recognized by G2 as a leader in 5 categories. It does a lot, including a top 5 security vendor. You can read 1,000-plus positive reviews on G2 and find out why more than 150,000 organizations have chosen to protect themselves with JumpCloud. JumpCloud is the smart choice. They help you build a strong cybersecurity foundation. By doing the basics right, you can reduce 98% of the issues that lead to cyber incidents. Steve Gibson's always saying this, by just doing a few things well. I think you could even, if you've ever listened to Security Now or even, you know, just any of our shows, you know what those are. 2-factor authentication, right? Multi-factor, including least privilege access, right? So, you know, you only get into the thing that you really need, not a whole lot of things. You got to have a comprehensive plan for patching. You got to have data protection. You got to have anti-malware. There's 5 things right there. JumpCloud does them all. One platform, one single pane of glass, and you got it all. You can reduce that IT sprawl, all that complexity, 5 programs doing 5 different things. That means the risk is higher because those systems are brittle. It's easy to misconfigure one or more. There's alert fatigue, each of them pinging you all the time. There's also, you know, challenges piecemealing together a number of point solutions from different vendors that may not interoperate well. JumpCloud solves this completely, cuts right through it, reducing administrative overhead, reducing complexity, but getting the job done all the same. So you can do more with the resources you have. JumpCloud includes zero trust. That's really important because you don't want to let somebody into your network and then say, hey, do whatever you need to, or want. That's the worst case scenario and has bitten a lot of people right now. With the JumpCloud, your device and user identity and access management is completely managed. You can grant secure access, and it's all on a single integrated platform. The last thing you want to do is kind of cobble together identity and SSO and other capabilities with all the different vendors. Then who do you call if there's a problem? It's just a mess. JumpCloud just makes it seamless. Hybrid work, of course, is a big issue these days. A lot of employees who could come back to work don't want to. A lot of employees who can come back to work want to. So you got to support hybrid work. And that means, of course, more challenges for IT administrators. JumpCloud makes it easy to securely manage users on and off-prem. All of the devices, access just to the right people, just at the right time. It's a great idea. Fully evaluate JumpCloud right now for free. Go to cloud.jumpcloud.com/windows, C-L-O-U-D dot J-U-M-P, C-L-O-U-D. .com/windows, cloud.jumpcloud.com. Help your organization move to a modern, secure, hybrid work model. The time is right. The time is right. cloud.jumpcloud.com/windows for a full evaluation. I think you'll agree. It's a simple, perfect solution for many, many businesses. Thank you, JumpCloud, for supporting Windows Weekly. You support Windows Weekly, by the way, by using that address so that they know you saw it here. That's, again, cloud.jumpcloud.com/windows. Let's see. Let's talk about Build. Some of the sessions now out. Yes?
Yeah. Yes. If you like comedy relief, I recommend searching for the term Windows. No, actually, there are.
Is there any Windows in there?
There are a few things. In fact, the one I think we're all looking forward to the most, it features Panos Panay, right? So there's one called Create Next Gen Experiences at Scale with Windows. Remember, this is a developer show, so I'm, well, ostensibly a developer show, so I'm kind of curious about that. Building great apps with Windows, this will no doubt... Sorry.
No, I was just going to say, let's be clear, though. This isn't about, like, new Windows features or anything like that.
Right.
Let's tamp down people's expectations about the Windows part of this.
Sorry, I thought it was sufficiently negative there. So I think the fact that Panos Panay is involved in that talk makes it potentially interesting. And I'm hoping that there'll be some, you know, kind of general Windows news maybe in the keynote. I know. Okay. Okay.
It's nice to want
stuff out the light at the end of the tunnel.
It's nice. Here's what you're going to hear about at Build. Ready? If you go to the sessions, there's 500 plus sessions listed up there. You know what? There's a lot of Power Platform, a ton of it.
Right.
There's a ton of IoT sessions, like many IoT sessions. So right now, Microsoft's IoT strategy is kind of in flux. They're talking about Azure Edge. They're talking about IoT. They're talking about IoT Metaverse, like I talked about before. So they're trying to bring some clarity, hopefully, to their IoT strategy, because right now it doesn't feel like there's a lot of clarity.
So... these things are, like Power Platform especially, are at least client or client adjacent, if you will, for IoT. Meaning, I guess we'll just call them not Azure, you know, or at least not Azure specific. So that's interesting to me. I feel like the last 1,100 builds have been very focused on Azure and those kinds of things.
No, there's still going to be a lot of Azure. There's still going to be a lot of Azure.
No, of course. I know. We can't escape it. It's fine. Right. But I'd like to anything client-related.
Yeah. Right? So there's going to be, obviously, DevTool-related stuff. There's going to be cloud native. There's a lot of, if you look up the term cloud native, there's a lot of that. A lot of stuff with Teams, not surprisingly, especially Teams, what do they call them? Collaborative apps, right? There is a ton about the Microsoft Graph, which I also think is really interesting because I feel like we haven't heard a lot about that lately. Graph, you know, is the single endpoint that Microsoft has, so you can get at the data that's in all the parts of Office 365 and even Windows now, right? So it'll be interesting to see what they say about that at Build.
Yeah. Yep.
And AI. Yep. Lots of AI, again, because this is kind of how they feel like you need to see the future.
Listen, there's going to be Azure stuff and AI and ML and HoloLens.
Yeah,
and
for sure.
Geez, I'm just going to try to stay with it. But I want to believe.
I don't think there are any quantum sessions, which I'm happy about. I think there's no quantum. Yep. There's also only two sessions that make any mention of Web3, which I take as a positive. There's only two things that use that term.
I can't. What does Microsoft have to say about Web3 in general?
Nothing.
They're not a
I mean, they've got sessions that are talking about blockchain in the context of Web3, because they do have blockchain platforms and they've worked with consensus around blockchain, right? So they have some things to say about that. But I like that they're keeping it real and not just using all the buzzwords. Like even metaverse, it's only like 5 sessions that use the word metaverse. So that's good.
Yeah.
Good job.
Yeah.
Yep.
Okay. There's a good chance the quantum team was sucked into a black hole of their own making. Right? Maybe they disappeared. We don't know.
They're gone. They
We're
could
still
be here.
Shell-shocked, Paul and
they
I
might not
about
be.
This.
We don't want to look in the
I'll
box.
Never recover
we don't know.
From that. Yeah. I will never recover from my quantum briefing.
I know.
Oh, what fun.
Oh, and Paul
they
and I are going to be doing a session at Build.
Good.
Together.
When is that going to be?
We're helping.
It's
going to
be about quantum computing, by the way.
Keynote. It's all quantum, like just quantum.
Paul and Mary Jo explain quantum computing.
All qubits all the time, baby.
Yeah, it's right good. After the main keynote on the first keynote of the day. We're going to be on a panel that is going to talk about the keynote.
Yeah.
Good. I am playing Flutter Pinball now. This is in Flutter. Now, this was for Google I.O., so pay no attention to the... But it's kind of... I mean,
so
it's
the
all...
reason this is interesting is that Flutter is designed to create, you know... Well, Flutter is, I should say, is a UI framework.
Whoa.
It's not designed for the gaming, right?
No, but
it's designed
yet,
for applications.
Yeah, this
but
is pretty
But it is
smooth,
hardware accelerated.
Smooth. Yeah.
Yeah, and what's interesting about this app you're showing is that this is a web app.
Yes, this is in a web page. Kind of like Fortnite.
So created with Flutter. They did this just to kind of show, like, look, this isn't our target right now, but even with Flutter in its current state, you can create this kind of, you know, casual
game. It's pretty impressive. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep. Now, it's not a... Flutter's not a Google product, is it?
Yeah.
Oh, it is. Okay. So that's why they mentioned this at Google I.O., to get people using
it. Yeah, so it's a UI framework. They have a whole kind of an app framework, it's not really a framework, an app ecosystem app for app developers called Firebase. Those two things work together. They've expanded Flutter out so that it works with desktop platforms, you know, the web, Windows, Mac, and Linux, if you can believe that. And Canonical, in particular, is using Flutter for a lot of their new work. So their installer is going to be done with Flutter. They're writing new apps in Flutter. I think they're doing firmware updates with Flutter, which is interesting. So anyway, Flutter has dramatically increased. So it used to be a real mobile app framework, mobile apps, you know, for iOS and Android. And now it's almost everything. It's pretty, you know, they don't do Tizen, I guess. But, I mean, they're pretty much everywhere.
It's good. I mean, you could do the, the ball is fluid and smooth, and it's pretty nice. Pretty nice.
Yeah, we try. We cringe if you say fast and fluid around here these
fast
days.
Fast and fluid.
We do.
We get a little twitch, you know.
We can't do that.
It's a good demo. So it's pure Flutter? There's no WebSM or anything? It's just, that's pretty impressive.
I don't know. So, obviously, when you use a framework to target native platforms, there's got to be something under the covers. So I don't actually know
what is
under Flutter for the web.
There.
Yeah, I'm not really sure. They're using desktop technologies on Windows. I know that.
I'm increasing. You know, there've been a lot of. So the whole idea is you cross platform, develop it, and it runs everywhere, somewhat native.
If only a company called Sun had come up with something like this in the '90s.
But Flutter and Dart are really well beyond what Java.
Yep.
Java.
Oh, no,
is.
I'm joking. But, I mean, the notion of write once, run anywhere.
Yeah,
right?
Which,
honestly, as a marketing phrase, is really good. You know? Everyone understands that immediately. It's a great idea.
Sure.
Java was not, did not live up to that at all.
Well, Java is probably still number one or two language in the world, you know, after C++.
It is, but it's up on the server, right? As a client development platform for creating apps, that ship sailed, right? That's not what Java's used for these days.
Yeah.
But I think Flutter, you could argue that Flutter is the logical
It's successor. A clean, Dart's a great language. It's clean.
Yep.
Flutter seems to be a very good framework.
So if you're into creating app or, you know, software development or whatever on the client, I think the thing you have to get over or just kind of embrace or whatever is there are different ways to do UI. Microsoft and others, well, actually the web started this notion of what we'll call like declarative UI, where you describe what a UI is going to be and the thing rendering it does it in a certain way, and maybe it is what you want and maybe it isn't. Microsoft has XAML for that. I really like XAML and I really like this approach. And the notion is you have UI code that is separated from your, C# code in this case of Microsoft usually. And, you declare your, describe your UI with XAML and you respond to events with C# code. Like, I like that kind of separation. You know, Flutter uses Dart to do declarative UI in Dart code. Like, so it's like C# or C++ or whatever, or Java. You know, it's similar to that. So it's different. And it's kind of a conceptual hump you have to get over, but it's not the only environment that does this. I think, I'm not really that super familiar with this stuff, but I think, you know, Swift UI is similar, and I suspect Kotlin has something, Jetpack or whatever is very similar.
Yeah, but you know, Kotlin's more used for Android, Swift for iOS. Flutter really doesn't care what platform, right?
Flutter is cross-platform. Yeah. That's the dream.
That's the real strength of it. Yep.
Yep.
All right, Mary Jo, go scratch Sriracha because it's time to talk Xbox. Paul Thurrott.
Yeah, actually, most of this is not Microsoft stuff. It's because, you know, all the big stuff happened last week.
Well, there's one big story we talked about yesterday on Windows Weekly, which is you can now play Fortnite on iOS and Macintosh thanks to Microsoft.
I'm going to hold off on that one. I'm using that as a pick.
Save it. I won't mention it.
We saved
exactly
that one.
How.
Okay. I mean, that's a little secret Xbox jab right at the end. So there have been rumors for years.
You're sneaking it in now, Microsoft. Mary Jo.
Yeah. I asked her if I could do an Xbox cocktail pick of the week, but she said no. there have been rumors for years that Microsoft has been working on an Xbox streaming something of some kind. I mean, a long time ago, it was an Xbox media streamer, so it was going to be based around.
Well, didn't they
Xbox
have Mixer? I mean, didn't they fail already in that field?
No, I mean like a device to stream that content to a TV or to a stereo system.
Oh, like an Apple TV or a Roku.
Yeah. So that never kind of came around. And then as the consoles progressed, there was this notion of, well, we have this capability to take an Xbox One and play that game on a computer. Well, what if we could play that game on a little device? And they kind of started, the rumors about that. Microsoft was working on stuff like that. And now, in the current generation, of course, we have Xbox Cloud Gaming, which is game streaming, which is part of Xbox Game Pass Ultimate. And the notion of a little streaming stick that just does that makes tons of sense. And so there are various endpoints for Xbox Cloud Gaming, obviously mobile, PCs, Macs, the web. Smart TVs are coming on board. And now these rumors are coming up again. Microsoft supposedly plans to release some kind of a streaming stick that will look a lot like an Amazon stick or a Roku stick or whatever.
Huh.
Plug it into an HDMI port on a TV and stream your games. So there's no reason that can't work. That sounds great. That should be fine. Hmm. Microsoft has not announced it, but that's the rumor. So we shall see. The past few weeks, several weeks now, it's been kind of tough if you cover the industry because every single company on earth announces earnings all within a 2-week period of each other. And Sony and Nintendo were among the last. So those two companies just announced their earnings. I don't really care about their earnings too much. What I'm looking for is like what's going on with the console sales, right? So Sony has only sold 2 million PlayStation 5 consoles in its most recent quarter. It has sold 19.3 million overall since the console debuted. That's below the number that it had sold for PlayStation 4 in a similar time period.
Wow.
And it's all because of component problems, right? Yeah. I mean, Sony's
they'd
been
like to ship
this for
more.
A long time.
Yeah.
And I think they would ship more. I think the demand is there. They just can't get there. The problem is, this is like, these numbers are like 2 million in a quarter. Like, that's terrible. Yeah. That's really, really bad.
Yeah.
So, and it's also less than half what Sony had expected to sell. Like the problems were actually worse than even they thought was going to be the case. So what they told investors was that these component shortages are going to ease up this year, and they actually expect this quarter and then going forward things to get better. But that said, they only expect to sell 18 million consoles in the current fiscal year. And I think, I don't know if I have the figure here, but that's below what it was in the last fiscal year, I guess is the easiest way to say it. So still some issues. And then Nintendo, which seems to be kind of immune to this stuff almost, actually they saw some impact from component shortages as well. And so they sold 4.11 million Switch consoles in the quarter. They have sold 23 million just in the last year. But that's down from $28.8 billion the previous fiscal year. And they say, actually, what they're saying is like, you know what? We're just going to split our stock and maybe you guys just won't worry about it too much. I think like they're like, yeah, we're not going to do as good. They only expect to sell 21 million units this year. Switch might be getting a little long in the tooth. Maybe it's time for a 4K version or something. I don't know. But they've all been hit by the same problems. And although I'll just point out, you know, Microsoft actually had kind of record console sales in the last quarter. And according to NPD in the United States, at least, they're something we've never thought I'd say, leading sales of the current generation console. So they seem to be doing pretty well. They won't give us numbers, but if these things are all true, they could conceivably be outselling Sony, at least, and possibly Nintendo, which is crazy times.
Yeah.
Crazy times.
They did just release that OLED update, so it's not like... I feel like they don't. They're not.
I think that came out maybe September, October.
Yeah, no, I don't think there's another, you know, Switch 2 sitting in the warehouse
or
anything.
Yeah, I don't think anyone expected OLED. I think a lot of people at the last year, if you talked, we talked about this last June, July, we would have been like 4K, right? They're going to do 4K,
right,
obviously,
right,
4K,
right.
But you know, Nintendo's the Disney of consoles. They don't care.
And they've been doing fine with this. The Switch has been doing fine.
People love Nintendo.
Yeah,
yeah, we're fine.
I still like my Switch.
Yeah.
Let's take a little break. Back of the book coming up, which, of course, means many things, but most importantly, beer. and a beer for you, Paul, I think.
Oh,
Mary Jo has selected something special. Oh. A little something special for Mr. Thurrott to celebrate his new country of origin.
Country of destination.
You're not emigrating or anything. You're just visiting.
Leo, we don't have anything to announce at this time.
I love your Instagrams. I have to say, I just saw the giant soccer ball. Wow.
Yep. Well, yeah. So by the way, just to put that one in perspective, there's a traveling Vatican display, you know, like a museum type thing happening. They're putting it in the Zocalo. It's in a giant version of the Sistine Chapel, like built right in the Zocalo.
What?
And so I said to Stephanie when we saw this thing, we wanted to see it today.
Now you don't have to go to Rome.
Tickets. So it's like we have the Vatican reproduced in the Zocalo, but because it's Mexico, let's throw up a soccer ball too. Because
you know, the you're Holy like, Father, I'm told.
We're religious. We like Catholicism here.
Football.
We like football
fan. I think you're safe. Yep. I think you're safe. Do you mind if I show a few of these?
No, of course not.
Beautiful pictures. I guess you put them up right before the show, I think. Let me see.
Oh, we were just walking around today. We didn't.
Yeah, this is like your early morning walk or something. Because I'm curious about the neighborhood. Let's see.
Oh, I see. This is just downtown. This is downtown. Center. Okay. This is near the hotel.
Here's the setup you're working with right now, which
that's right.
At the hotel, yeah. Looks better from the other side, to be honest with you. But okay, yep. Yeah. These are so. This is just downtown. It's a beautiful
like
city.
Look
at this.
Center.
Look at this. Such a gorgeous city. But I understand that some of the buildings are a little because the ground is moving.
Yeah.
So some of the buildings.
Yeah.
Are
if you
little...
could, if you could imagine that ground could be like water. That's what Mexico City is.
It
like.
Was a swamp.
Yeah.
Beautiful. That's great. I really enjoy Mexico. I have to say, you're gonna have.
Yeah, I do too.
This, I don't know. This is very Mexican also. Yeah. Don't know what's going on.
Quality
here.
Mexican sidewalk.
Probably been there for months, just like that.
Yep.
I don't know what this means. It doesn't sound good.
I can tell you what this means. So remember there was a kind of a famous subway crash in Mexico a couple of years ago.
Back in 90.
So what this
night,
is saying, I don't
ago.
Know what lesionados means, but
that's
this is what
that's
happened
wounded,
was.
Injured,
wounded,
dead.
So wounded, dead. So the government just came out and said, you know what, no one's really at fault.
No sanctions.
And they were like, you know, actually, someone was at fault. Maybe we should figure
this
out.
This is something I love about Latin countries. Spain's like this, too. Protests, signs everywhere. Everybody's pissed off.
So there's
about
no pictures of this, but there was a protest that I made a video of. Yeah. I'll put that up later. But
yeah, it's fun.
A nice little protest.
There's the giant soccer ball next to the Vatican.
Yeah, the Vatican replica in the back and the football in the front.
That's
you gotta have priorities.
Priorities. What fun! Yeah. What fun! I think you're having a great time. So this is not your neighborhood. This is just a
no. This is the center.
But it's walking distance. Yes, or no?
Yeah. Well, you would probably. I mean,
you wouldn't want to walk.
It's a 10-minute drive.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Very nice.
I mean, we have pictures of the area.
What camera are you using?
iPhone.
Extinct on the iPhone.
It's a. It's a modern smartphone of a certain variety.
All right, let's take a little break. I want to talk about our sponsor, New Relic, and then the back of the book, Paul's Tips, Mary Jo's code names, her enterprise picks, and, of course, some beer, too. New Relic, a name you should know. If you're a software engineer, a name you really should know. You've probably gotten that middle-of-the-night phone call, right, where you're asleep, you're comfy, you got your socks on and nothing else, and your phone buzzes with an alert, and suddenly you're on duty. There's something broken. You know, your mind's already racing. What could be wrong? Is it the back end? Is it the front end? Is it global? Is it the server? Is it the network? Is it the cloud provider? Do we have slow-running queries? The worst one. Did I push a bug in my last deploy? Now you got your whole team. They're scrambling. They're moving from tool to tool. They're messaging back and forth. They're desperate. They're trying to fix the issue. And the clock is ticking. The boss is going to get up in a couple hours. What is going on? If only you had New Relic. According to New Relic, only half of all organizations have implemented observability for their networks and systems. Observability, the ability to look at your network wherever it is, across silos, across into the cloud, and see what's going on. This report showed how maintaining network observability is a big issue for companies around the world, but not companies using New Relic. New Relic is one product with 16 different monitoring products inside. Normally you'd buy them separately. But when you have them all at once, you get application monitoring, APM, which means you know exactly what's going on with your apps, your microservices. If you use Kubernetes, you'll love Pixie, instant Kubernetes observability, distributed tracing, which means it goes, you know, right through those walls and you can see, no more guessing. You'll see exactly what's going on, see all your traces without management headaches, find and fix issues fast. You've got network performance monitoring. Ditch those data silos for a system-wide correlated view and a whole lot more. That's just four of the 16 tools that come with New Relic. More importantly, you can pinpoint issues if you need to down to the line of code. So if it is that commit from last night, you can know exactly what went wrong and fix it quickly. Maybe before alerting anybody else, just go, oh, whoops, all done, back to bed. That's why the dev and ops teams at DoorDash use New Relic, and GitHub uses New Relic, and Epic Games uses New Relic. More than 14,000 other companies use New Relic to debug and improve their software. Observability is the last stage, the last most important stage in rolling out a product, right? It's being able to see how it operates in situ. Whether you run a native cloud startup or a Fortune 500 company, it just takes 5 minutes to set up New Relic in your environment. Now, I hope I've got you wanting it. Now, here's the good news. It's free. You know that next middle-of-the-night call is just around the corner. New Relic can solve that problem, get you back to bed fast, and you get access to the whole New Relic platform, plus 100 gigabytes of data free every month, free forever. No credit card required. So at the very least, you should be right now going to newrelic.com/windows and getting it installed. So at the very least, you've got it. newrelic.com/windows. And of course, you know, their hope is you're going to want to roll it out for the whole enterprise, for all the engineers. Everybody's going to have New Relic, and that's great. That's great. But right now, free forever, the whole platform and 100 gigabytes of data free per month. It's a great, I mean, that's a great trial offer. Except it doesn't stop, right? It goes forever. NewRelic.com/windows. NewRelic.com/windows. Retcon 5, who works in IT, says my heart's starting to race. He's had those calls. What do I do? NewRelic.com/windows. Retcon 5 is going to be on the cruise, Paul. I can't wait. Cruise.twit.tv. See if there's still some openings. We're going in 2 months. Paul and Stephanie's first cruise. So it'll be fun watching them hang over the railing. No, you guys are going to have so much fun. It won't be your last, I think. And we are thinking about things we got to do. We have to think, Paul, about what we're going to talk about. We have an event, you know, where we're supposed to get on stage and talk. I don't know. What do you want? You want to talk about the history of Windows and I'll just nod?
Jeez. No.
I know. I'll sit on the corner of the stage and install Linux and anybody who brings their computer up. And then Yikes. You could talk about Windows. No.
This may be a more hostile territory than you think it is.
It's going to be more Windowsy than not, I think, because Rich Campbell's going to be on board and Raphael. Yep. So it's going to be a great... I can't wait. It's going to be so much fun. Polar bears. No, I don't think polar bears. Regular bears. Otters.
Regular bears.
Regular. Just regular run-of-the-mill bears. Salmon.
There are helicopters and seaplanes.
Seaplanes, and, bald dog eagles, sleds. Dog sleds, and the unmarried men walk, which I'm looking forward to.
All I'm looking for is walk around a town and eat a crab or something.
Oh, there'll definitely be that. There'll definitely be that, yeah. Can't wait. It's going to be a lot of fun. July 16th through the 23rd, if you want to know more, cruise.twit.tv. It's going to be fun. Now, to the back of the book, Mr. Paul Thurrott.
Yeah. So where am I?
I'm sorry. I didn't mean to jump you. You want me to stall some more? I can talk about
something
else.
It's shocking that this came up because it's not like we do this the same way every single week. this came up, I feel, maybe a week or two ago, but we had mentioned this book After Steve.
Trip Mickle. Yeah. I'm interviewing him. We're going to do a special triangulation. What'd you think?
Okay. I think this is the best business book I've read in years and is one of the very best books about Apple in particular, and is literally because it's really the only one, but the definitive take on the post-Steve Jobs era.
Oh, nice.
I'm fascinated in the history of certain companies, obviously Microsoft, Google, and Apple among them. And it's fascinating to me. The number of things that I don't think anyone has ever heard of outside of the company in this book is incredible. Things like Scott Forstall sounding an early warning on the Intentigate problem because he was having that problem. His team, who's doing the software for iOS for the phone, wasted months trying to figure out, thinking it was them, but in fact it was the hardware.
Oh my God.
And him going to Steve Jobs and Johnny Ive and saying, hey, this is completely screwed up. We need to fix this. And they're like, no, we love this design. Deal with it. And then pretending in public.
Thank you, Johnny.
It was...
Johnny.
A lot of form over function stuff. That's fascinating to me. Of course, Forstall doesn't come out that well either. He wouldn't have, apologized for Apple Maps and then he was out. But there's just a lot of the tax evasion stuff is amazing. The battles between form and function, frankly. Johnny Ive, I feel like with a lot of people, they're the right person, right time, right place for a while. And then they aren't,
Yeah.
And I think Johnny Ive was necessary for the early success of the second phase of Apple with Steve Jobs, with the iMac and the devices and all that. I actually think the work he did to get rid of the tired old UI and iOS when he took over software was important and very actually kind of Windows Phone-like, frankly, and was great. But there was a real thinness over quality issue that they, obviously the keyboards and the... all the, the various issues they had. And I think he kind of outstayed his welcome a little bit there, for sure. It's a fascinating book. And I know a lot of people listening to this probably can't stand Apple and, why would I ever want to read anything about this? Apple is just a fixture in the modern, society. It's the biggest company on earth. But as far as, personal computing goes, they're one of the big three. And I think it's important to understand this history, even if you don't intend to ever use an Apple product because it influences so much else outside of Apple.
Well, also the through line of Tim Cook versus Johnny Ive is a bit fun sounding. I haven't read it yet. I hope I get a copy of it before the interview.
Yeah, it's...
otherwise, I'll be asking you to do it.
Tim Cook's a tough one because in some ways he's like the Steve Ballmer of Apple in that he was, not a salesman, but he was not an engineer. Not a designer. He didn't have any hands-on anything with Apple products. He understood that, but he was really good at the process, and he was really good at costs and supply chain, and that might ultimately become an Achilles' heels of his with all the stuff going on in China. We'll see. Not a lot going on there in the design product sense. Nothing, literally nothing, actually. But he turned it into the biggest company in the world. I mean, that was all him, really. It's, you know, all these people are a little complex.
It's an epic story. I can't wait.
Trip Mikkel, really is. And
Trip Mikkel writes for the New York Times. He will be on a special edition of Triangulation Thursday, May 19th. So it's a week from tomorrow. 1:30 Pacific, 4:30 Eastern.
It's
I can't wait to read the book. I'm going to have to rush and get a copy. Yeah, yeah.
I can't believe how much I learned. And the Apple's history through Steve Jobs is well understood. It's been written and rewritten and rewritten. There are chapters of the Steve Jobs biography that I listen to in Audible again and again and again. You know, the creation of the iMac, the creation of the iPhone, the iPod, et cetera. Like, those things are just, I mean, these are case
studies. We lived through them. Yeah, and we lived through them.
This is as important, and there are no stories about it, you know, except now there are. So this is it. I mean,
it's funny because
it's well written.
The three of us are always saying how much we wish there were more books like this. G. Pascal Zachary's Showstopper, for instance, which is just a classic. I think of Tracy Kidder's The Soul of the New Machine. These books about... Yeah. You know, this moment in time when things happened that changed everything are for people who are in this industry just fascinating. And we've been bemoaning for a few years that there hasn't been another one like that. And I think it sounds
like it is.
Because
publishing
is
like any other business, right? You go through these phases. Microsoft was the biggest thing in the world during the antitrust cases. And so all of a sudden there were all these books about Bill Gates and Microsoft and whatever. Because people wanted to know more about this company. I think when Apple was ascendant under Steve Jobs, everyone wanted to know more about that.
Yeah.
Google, you know, went through that phase. I think today these books are about, like, Lyft and WeWork and Uber and, you know, these kind of new...
I don't either.
I don't care. Yeah. I couldn't care less. I'm never going to read a book about Facebook. I don't care.
No. Stephen Levy has a very good one, but it's just hard to read. I don't care.
I don't care. I just don't care. But I love that someone wrote a book about one of these companies they still think are so important. Well, you know, the importance is undeniable, but there just isn't anything there, and now there is, and it's amazing how much new there is in it.
I agree with you. Really, it's historic. An amazing time. Yeah. After Steve, how Apple became a $1 trillion company and lost its soul by Trip Mikkel. And again, we'll be talking to Trip in a week.
Not to go on and on. One of the little anecdotes about Apple is that because they're so humongous, you run into that law of big numbers kind of problem.
Yeah.
So, you know, we talk in the Microsoft space about how for any business to be viable, it has to be what we call a billion-dollar business, right? $1 billion run rate in a year. So you could have $250 million a quarter if that works out. Your billion-dollar business. Okay, that can go for it. At Apple, after the iPod, iPhone, iPad, that number... $20 billion was the number, and there was no such product, and they couldn't come up with a product that was going to do it. They thought the watch would do it. It didn't even come close.
Wow.
And the thing that kind of saved it for Tim Cook was he realized, being a businessman, that the future was probably not going to be any one big thing, but some combination of things, and that Apple Watch plus services could make a ton of sense. And that's what you see now at Apple. And I don't know what sir, I don't know Apple numbers off the top of my head, but Apple's services business
has
got to be closing on being the second biggest business they have.
It is the second biggest business after iPhone.
Oh, it is already. Right. I know it's double-digit billions per quarter, probably.
Yep.
It's absolutely a $20 billion business. Yeah. Like, it's crazy. It's way more than that. So they figured it out.
Impressive.
Yep.
Now, speaking of impressive, Epic was really mad at Apple and yanked Fortnite.
Yeah. Well, Apple yanked Fortnite, right? Because Epic put an in-game thing that bypassed Apple's payment system.
You're right. They did something that caused Apple to yank them. I guess that's probably the
on
best
purpose.
Way.
Yeah. On purpose.
Yeah.
God bless. You know.
God bless him. God bless him.
So, anyway, the problem is Fortnite is one of the most popular games in the world, obviously, but it's not available on any of Apple's platforms, right? So, Microsoft has this thing called Xbox Cloud Gaming, which I mentioned earlier. This is a feature of Xbox Game Pass Ultimate, which is a $14.99 per month subscription service, and it lets you stream games to mobile devices, including iPhones and iPads. It does it through the web because Apple, you know, in the same category of being Apple, wants to get a per game vig on everything that Microsoft does through this service, and Microsoft said no. So it goes through the web, but it works fine. And
is it fast and fluid? Does it really feel like you're Playing
you, I don't know. Are you trying to hurt me? Like, what do you?
I just cringed when you said that. I'm like, no.
I just had a mini stroke. Thanks. so it probably is what you said it is. But the thing is, to get this to work on an iOS an iPhone or an iPad, you have to pay for the subscription, right? So what Microsoft did this past week was they teamed up with Epic Games to make Fortnite available via Xbox Cloud Gaming for free.
No subscription needed. Nothing.
They're just doing it for free. What? So you can play this one game via the service for free, and that means they brought it back to the iPad and the iPhone, bypassing all of Apple's stupid controls. And they're not taking a cent for doing it. They're just doing it for free.
Oh, boy.
Yep.
Oh,
so
man.
Nothing in business is truly altruistic. I get that. I'm not an idiot, but I love this kind of thing. Microsoft supports Epic in its legal battles against Apple and Google because they're having the same problem with Google too. So it's not just the iPhone, I should say. That's kind of the headline. But this means you can play Fortnite anywhere over Xbox Cloud Gaming for free without being a subscriber.
Nice.
Yeah. Awesome. Also, just a second quickie. App pick. DuckDuckGo today announced a Privacy Essentials extension for Chrome, which is hilarious, right? Which blocks Google Topics and Fledge, which are Google's new instruments for tracking and targeting its users. So DuckDuckGo, of course, is like, look, we think you should use our stuff. But if you do use Google Chrome, they allowed us to put this extension in their store for some reason. So you can actually use this to block Google's tracking stuff, which is, you know, not a horrible idea. So,
yeah. Go for it.
Yep.
Mary Jo Foley, Enterprise Pick of the Week time.
Okay. So I have two. My next two picks are also build related. One of them is about the Microsoft Store. So if you search for store in the session list at Build, you can see Microsoft's going to talk about the store quite a bit. In fact, in the Panos Panay session, I think this new, they're calling it the open store, is going to be mentioned. And the reason they're calling it that is because it's not limited to UWP apps anymore, right? And Microsoft's made it so Win32 apps can be in there, PWAs, all different kinds of apps. So that's going to be a big theme. And the other store that's going to get mentioned are the Store for Business and Store for Education, which people may remember last summer, Microsoft finally admitted they were going to discontinue. At that time, they said, yeah, we're going to have some kind of a replacement for them, basically involving Package Manager and Intune / Endpoint Manager. And it looks like they're going to describe what this is in depth at Build and explain to you if you're right now using the Store for Business or the Store for Education, where they're going to guide you to go next. So if you're somebody who cares about the store, Build might have a lot of information for you.
Interesting. For EDU.
Yes.
As well. Nice. And I am in the, I'm going to have a hankering for a code name.
Yeah. So you can tell I've been studying the Build session book over the past few days. There's a new code name in there, Haven. And this is a funny code name because Microsoft used the code name Haven a long time ago for an operating system research project. But this Haven has to do with bringing Kubernetes to the edge. They've got something called Project Haven. It's about making it so devs can bring their containerized Windows and Linux applications to hosts at the edge. So when I'm saying edge here, I mean edge computing, edge devices. I don't mean, you know, edge the browser. The reason this matters is Microsoft and other companies talk a lot about wanting to bring processing power out to the devices at the edge to reduce latency and make things work better. So they're going to talk, I'm sure, at Build about things like machine learning, image processing, and all these apps that do intensive computing at the edge. And so if you're thinking about those apps, one thing you may want is to have Kubernetes be able to manage those apps. So listen at Build for Project Haven. New code name.
Okay. Now, Mary Jo has done something I think wonderful to honor Mr. Paul Thurrott, your beer pick of the week.
Yes. So there, you know, craft beer in Mexico, it's starting to be a thing, but it's not really a thing. Mexico actually has a ton of beer, and they happen to be one of the biggest, if not the biggest, exporter of beer in the world, which is kind of an interesting fact.
Because of Corona, probably, huh?
Yep, Corona and Negra Modelo and all those different beers that
there's
you can
good,
get.
There's actually,
Pacifico, Dos Equis. Pacifico's excellent.
Pacifico's good. Yeah. They have some good beers,
They have some good beers. But in the U.S.
But they're big. They're not craft.
They're big conglomerates. Yeah. They're not really craft, right. But here in the U.S., there's this trend that's been happening for the past couple of years of breweries creating something called Mexican lagers. So what they're doing is they're taking yeast and hops and trying to recreate the style of beer that you get in Mexico. But
how would you characterize a Mexican lager? What is the...
So usually not very hoppy. More like using German yeast, very low ABV, but still kind of bright. Something that works well with spicy food and is something you could drink in a warmer climate.
Nice.
Not like a double IPA or something like that. That doesn't really lend itself to that. So there's a brewery in Seattle that I've been to a few times called Lowercase Brewing. They're in a neighborhood in Seattle called South Park. And they have a very big Hispanic population in that area of Seattle. And so they have a beer, Lowercase Brewing has one, that they call Mexican Lager. And because their name's Lowercase Brewing, they spell it with a small M and then all capital letters, Mexican Lager. Yeah, so they use German yeast. They make a Vienna style lager beer out of it. It's a little bit amber in color, and it's just, you know, if you know like the nice, refreshing, light Mexican lagers, this is an example of that. And the interesting thing about this is if you go to many breweries in the U.S. right now, they're all making Mexican lagers.
Interesting.
Like it's a thing.
Huh.
Yeah.
Huh.
But this is in honor of Paul and Stephanie getting a place in Mexico.
Woohoo! Arriba!
So, thank you. have you heard
apparently
of
it's just Stephanie.
Place?
Paul is not on the deed.
Yeah, right. They're not actually married, I heard. So, yeah.
Listen, if there was going to be one name on the deed, it wouldn't be mine. there is a place right down from where we bought that's called Falling Piano, which is a local brewery in Mexico City.
It's a hell of a name.
Nice.
We haven't been in it, but
I'm sure
they have a cool.
I mean, Mezcal, every corner has a Mezcal craft distillery, so I'm sure there's craft. I mean, I bet you anything.
Oh, for sure. For sure.
It's just not as predominant as here. Like somebody I know said, craft beer in Mexico is like it was in the U.S. like 10, 15 years ago.
That makes sense.
Like that's where they're at.
Yeah.
Well, because Mexico is like Spain or Portugal or wherever, where it's warm and the beer tends to be really light lagers, you know.
But they also have pulque. And have you had any pulque yet?
Pulque's not.
I like pulque.
What is pulque?
It's not okay.
It's the precursor
to oysters and
you need a mezcal for oysters. Yeah. Pulque is the precursor to mezcal, so it's a lighter brewed.
The thing you would skim away normally and make the animals eat.
No, it's delicious.
But someone has decided that it's artisanal.
It's fruity. it's fruity. Slightly fermented. But the thing is, it's about the same ABV as beer. So I have, and it's a traditional working man's drink. So I have a feeling that's possibly one of the reasons they're not, you know, jumping.
Somebody on the Discord, one of our friends who knows about Mexico, he said, no, Paul has the wrong idea. It's very tasty pulque.
Oh, I love pulque. Oh, okay. Yeah.
Listen, Mary Jo knows better than almost anybody. I'm not afraid of trying things. And
you are not.
Like lots of other things that most people would not eat. But I don't like pulque.
Pulque's sweet, and I think that's probably the real problem for Paul.
It's a consistency problem.
Yeah, it's also a little weird.
Yeah, thick.
You know?
Is it thick?
Yeah. It's thick, yes. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's gross.
Yeah. It's like a fermented beverage.
I don't like mezcal either because it's smoky. I'm just not into smoky things.
Yeah.
Right.
But Stephanie likes it. Right? You know.
Leo, I have to remind you of something before the show ends for Micah.
Now would be a good time.
Yes. He said, say the word Scott Hanselman.
I forgot. Scott Hanselman's going to be on Tech News Weekly tomorrow because, I don't know if we talked about this, he was instrumental in open sourcing
3D movie maker.
3D movie maker.
Yeah. Yep.
And so Micah's booked him tomorrow on Tech News Weekly.
Oh,
so
nice.
We all love Scott. Everybody loves Scott.
Yeah, Scott's great.
Super cool.
Yeah, make sure to tell him we said hi.
All right. He's a good guy. Yeah. All right.
And ask him to give you a little preview of what he's doing at Build.
Oh.
It sounds pretty cool.
Okay, did you get that, Micah? Ask him about Build. Yeah.
You're probably not going to get much out of
it. A couple of years ago, he was part of the Build keynote. And it was from his house, and it was so much fun.
It was so great. He did a great job with that.
So nerdy. Yeah, it was wonderful.
Yeah, it was so awesome.
Yeah, we really like Scott. So, I think that's going to be a great story, the open sourcing of Windows 3D Movie Maker.
Mm-hmm. Cool.
Yeah. No, that right. And that's got to be from the late 1990s, right?
Pretty old. Yeah. And what profanities they had to remove from the comments, things like that. That'll be really fun.
Yeah.
Nice.
When is Build again?
May 24th.
The very end of the month, yeah.
So that is a Tuesday. We are not going to do the keynote upon advisement from our attorneys. No, because Paul and Mary Jo say it's, probably nothing big there. I'm blaming you. No. I mean, we'll do the hardware event, but they probably aren't going to announce any new hardware, right? I mean, honestly, I feel like we could have skipped Google I.O., except they did announce some hardware.
I'm surprised you're so down on that. I thought it was kind of cool. I liked that they were finally back in person.
Yeah, well, I did too. I mean, it was all at Google's.
Yeah.
But,
we can give you the whole wrap of Build.
Well, that's the thing. The next day.
We'll be on the next day.
Exactly. Right? So Windows Week on the 25th, that will be your time to get everything important out of.
Yeah, we'll be talking all enterprise. Boom. Yeah.
Yeah.
I'll just remind everyone that Build is a developer show. And
So Paul
IoT,
has some
enterprise,
hopefully
be, metaverse.
Paul
yeah,
has some
they'll
to
be
say
like,
too. It'll be good.
He will. He'll It'll have a good. Couple sentences. Yeah. That's, we'll let him talk a little bit. Yeah.
Thank you.
Paul Thurrott, Mary Jo Foley, the dynamic duo of Windows Reportage. Mary Jo's at allaboutmicrosoft.com. Her ZDNet blog. Paul's at Thurrott.com. His blog, his publication, I guess I should say. It seems diminutive to say blog.
It's okay.
His site.
I've given up caring anymore. I used to really bristle at the blog thing.
Yeah, but. No, because it kind of sounds like you're in your basement. Your mom's
excuse favorite. Me, sir. I am an award-winning.
Award-winning. I insist.
It's okay. It's okay.
Thurrott.com. Become a premium member. You can read that whole Windows programming history, which is great reading. Paul's book, The Field Guide to Windows 10, his latest book, is available at leanpub.com. We do Windows Weekly every Wednesday around 11 a.m. Pacific normally. It was a little late today because of Google. That's 2 p.m. Eastern Time, 1800 UTC. You can watch or listen live at live.twit.tv. Chat live at irc.twit.tv. Of course, Club Twit members have their very own little clubhouse in our Discord. Club Twit is $7 a month, gets you ad-free versions of all of our shows, including this one, access to the Discord, and a special Twit Plus feed with all sorts of goodies that do not appear elsewhere. If you want to know more about Club Twit, twit.tv/Club Twit. After the fact, all the shows available at Windows, our website, which is twit.tv/ww. There's also a YouTube site with all the Windows Weekly shows. And, of course, if you search for Windows Weekly in your favorite podcast app, you should be able to find it and subscribe. And then you'll have it whenever you're in the mood, on demand, as they say. Thank you, everybody, for being here. And we will see you next time on Windows Weekly. Bye-bye.
Don't miss All About Android every week. We talk about the latest news, hardware, apps, and now all the developer-y goodness happening in the Android ecosystem. I'm Jason Howell, also joined by Ron Richards, Florence Ion, and our newest co-host on the panel, Wen Tu Dao, who brings her developer chops. Really great stuff. We also invite people from all over the Android ecosystem to talk about this mobile platform we love so much. Join us every Tuesday, All About Android on twit.tv.